Hello and welcome to Inside the Winner's Circle. I am your host, Joyce Bone, and today I'm going to be having a lively conversation with David Miska. He is with Lockheed Martin Aeronautics. But first, I'm going to throw it to Lee, and we're going to thank our sponsors.
Guess what, Georgia? Recycling just got easier thanks to the team at Waste Pro, whether it's tossing items into your curbside container at home, being environmentally friendly at the workplace, or properly disposing of your recyclables while at local events. Waste Pro can serve all your recycling collection and processing needs. Waste Pro also provides residential and commercial solid waste collection, processing, and disposal. Waste Pro cares for the communities we serve and truly are the waste professionals. Call us in Athens at 706-227-3222 or in Atlanta at 770-777-1447.
Great job, Lee. Thanks so much. David Miska is the Director of Environment, Safety, and Health for Lockheed Martin Aeronautics site in Marietta, Georgia. In this role, Miska has overall responsibility for all ESH programs and compliance activities in Marietta, which includes site environmental programs, occupational safety and health administration, aka OSHA, and customer compliance, health and wellness, and workers' compensation. Miska also provides ESH support to ensure EHS compliant programs at the Meridian, Mississippi, and Clarksburg, West Virginia plants. Miska came to Lockheed Martin Aeronautics in 2011 and has worked for Lockheed Martin in different capacities since 1994. He received his bachelor's degree from Eastern Kentucky University in Fire and Safety Engineering with a minor in Environmental Health and his master's degree in Safety Management from Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Miska also is a former volunteer firefighter and emergency medical technician. Welcome to the show. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you, Joyce. I appreciate the invite.
Well, you do have a very interesting background. I didn't even know there was a fire and safety engineering degree. That's amazing.
Yes, it was really good because it specialized in industrial risk management, which relates very well with what I do today. And it's kind of where I caught the bug for getting involved with environmental programs. I took my minor in environmental health after getting involved in some toxicology classes, and it just clicked with me. The two seemed to go together hand in hand, and then, of course, my career at Lockheed, I found that the departments are combined. It's one effort utilizing the same professionals, so it works perfect.
That's great. It's wonderful when you can combine your education with your passion. That doesn't always happen, so congratulations on that. And I've actually heard of Indiana University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, very
cool. I know somebody who went to school there.
Great school. Phenomenal reputation in the safety and health field. Excellent professors, and was really fortunate to take some classes down at NASA Goddard that they did in a cohort program when I was in the D.C. metro area.
All right. Well, let's just go ahead and discuss Lockheed Martin and
sure.
the work that's going on over at the Marietta site.
It's really cool. We spoke before the show, and you have some familiarity with the site. The place is huge. You know, we've got 912 acres on the Dobbins Air Reserve Base, and 7,700 employees, roughly, working there across the site. It was originally designed for about 55,000 employees back in the World War II era.
Right.
So massive facilities, massive infrastructure there. We've got about 8.8 million square feet of usable space. So as you can imagine, making sure that we're being efficient with our operation of our facilities is very important. We have some pretty significant utility bills, which I'll share with you in a little bit. So you can imagine what that would be like. We've been there for, and this is our 60th year. The plant started making B-29 bombers over 70 years ago. And it's just been a fantastic place. We've got real exciting programs with the C-130 Hercules is constructed here in Marietta, which is right now the longest running aircraft in the history of the Air Force or the Armed Services. And every year we make that aircraft more and more efficient, more fuel efficient, more user friendly, and safer to operate. And it's a tremendous workhorse for our folks. We're also involved in modernizing the C-5 aircraft, which is the largest aircraft you see in the fleet. And they're just amazing to watch as they lumber into Dobbins when they're coming in for work. You can't imagine how the things even stay aloft. Sometimes you think they're filled with helium, which
nice
we haven't tried.
Nice to see your work in the air, right?
Absolutely. And although the helium might be a go green thing because it would cause them to float in the air, you know, there's the whole other issues that come along with that. So that hasn't worked out. But seriously, the we're going through modernizing the fleet. The Air Force has, or the Department of Defense has asked us to go through and look at how we can make their aircraft more efficient. And as you can imagine, when you get into an aircraft that large, it burns a lot of fuel. And they can be very loud. And you want to make sure you have something that's quick, fuel efficient, has a nice range to it. And the modernization that we're doing right now makes them 40% quieter, 40% faster. They can carry much more weight, and they can travel, I think it's 30 to 40% further than before, so they can
that's
go a much greater distance without improving or landing. Yeah,
right. 40%, that's a lot.
It's pretty decent.
So. We'll go with those numbers. That's great. So, I have been to the facility, and it is definitely large, and it's interesting to see it, just to be there is just fascinating. And I got to see the kind of history on the walls that you know, have the pictures and the stories. And it's a very a unique place to visit. And I really enjoyed my time there. And we were driving around on the golf carts. It was great.
Excellent. Using an alternative fuel vehicle. We have a massive fleet of golf carts, electric vehicles, and hybrid vehicles as well.
Right. There's a lot that can be learned about business there. Supply chain management.
Yep.
I'm trying to think
of
the name of the airplane that was like the last six coming off the line.
Oh, the F-22 Raptor.
Raptor. Yes. I thought it was Raptor, but I didn't want to say the wrong name.
Yeah. A tremendous aircraft. Absolutely beautiful. And can go super cruise without afterburners. And to get an aircraft to afterburner, or to get it to super cruise speed, typically you have to go to afterburners, which just dumps massive amounts of fuel into the engines. And with that aircraft, our talented engineers were able to figure out how to get it to super cruise without going to afterburner. And the Air Force loved it. I mean, it just saves an incredible amount of fuel. I mean, it still uses a good amount of fuel as a fighter aircraft does when you're pushing it to its performance lengths. But when you don't have to go to afterburner all the time to get to that speed, you extend the range and you don't have to refuel as often. Your refueling aircraft aren't lumbering around in the air as much, and it just saves you all around. So it's a little bit of a sustainability story as well, that started with a target of best performance possible. But we did incorporate sustainability into that design, and then carried it over to the F-35, which really impressed our customer as well when we came forward with that design too.
Sounds like y'all are always looking at Kenai, constant and never-ending improvement.
That's a great way to put it. That's excellent.
So describe your job and how you ended up where you are today.
Sure. I have the absolute privilege of having the best possible job in the whole entire world,
doing something I love.
No, you can't have it. I've got 22 very talented and amazing professionals dedicated to the environment, safety, and health of our employees. They're extremely motivated and overachievers and impress me all the time. With a lot of the programs and the ideas that they come up with for different ways to keep our folks safe, and also find out ways to minimize our environmental impacts as we're trying to go through and get the work done. I started, as you mentioned earlier, as a volunteer firefighter when I was maybe like 15 years old, and my folks kind of always encouraged me to get involved with some type of community service activity. Growing up at the time when, as you may remember, the TV commercial with the Native American that's standing outside of Los Angeles looking at all the traffic and the pollution and everything. And
yeah, with the tear coming down his
eyes.
Yeah,
I just
wanted to give
him a hug.
He's such a
strong person, and he's got this tear in his face. And I remember that as a little guy, and I'm looking at this going, wow, what? And I turned to my dad at the time. It's like, what is going on? And he sat and explained it to me, and it's like, oh, my gosh. And then I started looking around and became a little, not a little militant for recycling at the home. And we, set up a little recycling program and everything else at
the
house.
Did you really?
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And
I'm impressed.
It's just stuck with me. And then I've had the chance to As I was working through my college time to work as an assistant fire marshal while going to school, and then in an oil refinery in the summertime to help pay for school, which worked out well. And when I got out, started working for a defense research company, doing mostly safety engineering type work, and the environmental efforts for that company were very separate. So I had kind of a supporting role with them, and then I went to work for a waste chemical company and started traveling around looking at hazardous waste sites and chemical spills and putting on training classes, and got the chance to really see what other companies were doing for their environmental and remediation and emergency response type activities, and had the chance to go to work for General Electric Aerospace at the time, back in 94, and then GE sold their aerospace group to Martin Marietta. Martin Marietta and Lockheed then later combined, and about a year ago, I had the opportunity to come down to Marietta, and wish I had done so many years ago, because the people here are just so nice in this part of the country. It's just amazing to talk and work with the folks down here.
We hear that a lot about the South.
Yeah, don't tell anybody up north or they'll all want to come down here.
My dad, my parents were from New York, and we moved here. I was 8. And my dad's like, I wanted to pull the bridge up behind me.
Absolutely. I can see why.
Yeah, it's that's great benefit of living here is the friendly people. So I have to ask you, growing up, did you play with fire? I have a brother who's a firefighter for Cobb County, and he was always starting fires. And we were like, we must channel that energy in the appropriate way. So
aim it for the good.
Aim it for the good. There you go.
I'm going to lose my clearance now.
You didn't. Yeah, we'll just pass on that question.
Nothing whatsoever. No, I had one minor fireworks incident at the time, and with just playing with bottle rockets in the neighborhood, and caught a tree on fire, and got in a lot of trouble for that one. So. that was got to see the fire trucks for all the wrong reasons at a young age.
I'm sure that made a big impression.
It did, and it realized that I had no reason to be messing with matches or fireworks and stuff. And you know how that's attractive to a little kid, or a teenager.
I have three boys.
Oh, you know it completely. Yeah.
If it doesn't injure you, it's not fun. So part of your job involves overseeing the sustainability efforts. Can you give more of an overview of what that entails?
Sure. We're trying to do our best to make the greatest impact we can around the world. Our customers have sustainability as has now become one of the things that is a large discriminating factor when they're doing source selection for the platforms that they're buying. And we're going through and trying to not only make those, find those efficiencies for ourselves and for our products to use them within the plant, but also to make sure that, the military can achieve their goal and not be so dependent upon fuel as they are today. They use a lot of fuel, and we need to make sure that just like I'm trying not to consume as much fuel as I can at home so it's available for other things, we're trying to make our products so that they're more fuel efficient as well. Most of my efforts are involved with overseeing our Go Green activities and the way that we're trying to reduce energy costs and water usage and our carbon footprint at the facility itself. So it's more from a physical facilities type activity. 5 years ago, our corporation rolled out a 25% a Go Green program that mandated a 25% emission and waste and water usage within 5 years. And we've gone through and we've actually met those goals, which are great. And a lot of your independent business owners can do that as well, and small business owners too, when they look at trying to make a business case for doing a Go Green or a sustainability effort. As you look at your payback, and we also, with our 5-year 25% reduction effort, our prioritization went towards projects that could give us a payback within 5 years so that we could actually see those returns on investment, which help sustain that cycle and keep those funds available for additional projects. There are, right now we've got, I think this year I have about $1.5 million targeted just to do energy usage and water use reduction and carbon emission reduction efforts. So, being able to teach our employees and the environment safety and health team how to make a business case for their activities is a big part of what I do. And then to help monitor their projects and make sure we are getting that return, and then get it in front of leadership so that we keep the projects rolling.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. We were studying that in supply chain management last night in Dr. Michael Maloney's class on sustainability and business cases, and he's an excellent professor, and I would like to introduce you to him sometime. I think that,
oh, please,
that could be an interesting case study for his people.
That would be fantastic.
So what are the challenges are you seeing as you prepare your business case studies and you're trying to find the right projects to fit Lockheed Martin? What are some of the challenges that you run into? It's a large facility.
It's huge, and it's the size of the facility. Although Lockheed does own some of the buildings there on the property, the majority of the buildings we lease from the Air Force. It is technically Air Force Plant 6.
Mm-hmm.
It was built, most of it was built back in the World War II era.
Right.
Before the age of computers. So there were just massive amounts of drafting people there. Our infrastructure is very large. The capacities of that infrastructure is very large. And some of them we're not utilizing as efficiently as we could. One of the wastewater lines that run from our main plant to our wastewater treatment facility is about the diameter of this room. And because
That's
if you can imagine,
pipe.
Yeah, you can imagine the volume of water that is,
right,
you know, has to be flushed several times a day. So our current capacity at peak, we actually need maybe a pipe that's about 3 feet in diameter. So we've gone through and done a great job to put in low-flow toilets and even some, you know, waterless urinals and things like that. And we discovered that an unexpected return on it is that sometimes things don't then move through the system like you need them to, because there's not enough water traveling through the infrastructure to keep things going. So you look at it from one side where you're saving money by putting in a water reduction effort, and then you actually up your maintenance costs because it has a different type of an impact on your system. So we are working with the Air Force to try to identify where we have opportunities like that to go and either put different piping in or put sleeves inside of pipes and things to increase travel velocities and things so that we can still do our best to try to, you know, reduce our water usage, which is obviously within Georgia's very important. You want to keep that water footprint down as much as possible.
I just had Cobb County Water Authority on last week, and that was the case they were making. Yes.
Yeah, and with these buildings that were built in the World War II timeframe, is the construction materials were different then. The insulation materials were different. Some of them had black roofs on them. And if you can imagine the Georgia sunshine, you know, roof that, hey, maybe it's got a black rubber roof on it that doesn't leak. Mm-hmm. But if you think what that's doing to your utility costs to try to cool it, or the fatigue factor on the employees inside. So we're going through and replacing, you know, where when it comes time, as those roofs become up for replacement, as we're going through and taking some of the LEED and sustainability guidelines. And although we're not going through and certifying all of our buildings, we are pulling different things out of there as projects come up to make sure that we include those sustainability items into the redesigns. And, you know, certainly light color roof is easy to do. It's almost the same price as a darker color roof. So the age of the facilities is a big challenge for us. Constantly making sure that we're able to show that, you know, return on investment for our sustainability efforts is, you know, we used to be able to, or a lot of companies could many years ago make a business case, well, we'll get our payback in 15, 20 years. Well, today, in today's economic environment, you have to really go and make sure you've got a much closer return on your investment.
Mm-hmm. So, shorter time horizons.
Absolutely.
Do you guys feel like you're a leader in the sustainability effort?
I do. I'm always amazed by the support that we get from our corporate offices. We have a lot of really talented people out in the facilities and working on the projects. within our advanced development programs group, the group that does all the really cool research and development. They have a team that's focused just on sustainability efforts and how to include that in our product designs. We also go through and share our sustainability and Go Green best practices across our different sites through working groups. We have a collaborative website set up internal to the company where we can post best practices and share them. We have groups that meet collaboratively monthly and share different ideas and show off what they're doing. And that's a great way to get ideas. I'll steal from anybody. I don't have to invent it. And our folks are the same way at the Marietta site. You know, there's a lot of things that we invent, and there's a lot of things that we take and make even better or just, you know, rebrand and use right off the shelf from other folks as those opportunities come up.
So, has there been any employee-driven ideas?
Absolutely. Great question. One of the things that we got a lot of payback from a couple years back is we've had, the site historically has had safety committees, and those are employee-run that meet monthly. And as with a safety, you know, with a safety issue, you can have rules, but it's really the people in the field that see things you don't and can really come up with creative ways to, you know, solve those problems, reduce the risk, keep people safe. A couple years back, we actually added an environmental theme to the safety committees, and we rebranded it as an e-safety committee. And, you know, large and mid-sized employers, if you have safety committees, I'd encourage you to do the same and take advantage of those folks that are out there now looking for your safety hazards and having those good discussions, and include some environmental education to them, let them know what to look for, and then turn them loose, and you'll be surprised what they come back. Or even some of the stories of, you know, do you realize on Saturday night I was here in this other building and, you know, all the lights were on.
Right.
And, you know, just simple little things like that. When when your utility bill is, you know, we had a electric bill probably, I guess our, I think it was 2 months ago, or sorry, our largest one in 2010 was $1.6 million a month.
How'd you like that bill? I used to have that conversation with your husband.
I used to get upset. I had a 54-hole miniature golf course at one point, and I would get $2,500 electric bills and be like,
oh my gosh,
I don't like this. And I also learned, pray that it doesn't rain on Saturdays when you have an outdoor business.
Oh, absolutely.
That's against the rules, right?
Yeah, so that actually makes me feel so much better.
Yeah, yeah.
about those $2,500 bills.
I had gas heat when I lived in Virginia, and then when I moved down here, I had electric heat and didn't realize that is a extra cost. Mm-hmm. But I certainly don't come close to that type of electric bill. But
so when you're getting that, what, $1.7 million bill, mm-hmm. somebody's going through that and getting yelled at?
Not yelled at, but we absolutely can use that to our advantage to get traction for initiatives like putting in lighting control systems, putting in motion detectors,
right.
Adding responsibilities to people that are already there. You know, businesses, a retail establishment has security people. And you need a certain amount of lighting to maintain that security, but you don't need surgical levels of lighting.
Right.
surgical.
So they can, if you, you know, put into their job descriptions or get their buy-in to help you be sustainable and
right.
be environmentally
Since
friendly.
Since they're walking around anyway.
Turn the lights off. Or better yet, if you're going through and, you know, three nights in a row, you know, John Smith keeps leaving lights on in his office, send me a note.
Yeah,
and I'll go talk to John Smith
right.
and say, hey, you know, do you do this at your house? You know, this is our electric
bill. He probably
bill.
Does.
Yeah, knock it off. Yeah.
You need to get like the European hotels. You got to put your key in to have
lights
come
going.
On.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. I guess that wouldn't work so well in a
you can incorporate
facility
that.
Like Lockheed
Hold on,
Martin.
Let me
write that down.
I'm going to write that down. You guys get royalties for that? That's a good one.
That's a freebie.
Love it.
So what do you think are some of your employees, I guess, best environmental practices that you've seen at your site?
Well, I think that they're going through and finding ways for us to, as an example, we had some complaints about the lighting in one of our buildings. We're using sodium vapor lights, and they worked fine. They were, you know, the lighting levels were adequate. It did kind of cast a yellowish orange tint to the inside of the building, and our largest building is 76, can hold 76 football fields, and in the one building, it's 4.5 stories tall, so it's pretty massive, and you need big, large buildings to build aircraft. And we started talking with them about how can we change the light levels and the quality, and we're being very sensitive to our energy costs and the heat that the light fixtures put out. And our engineering group actually found a set of lighting fixtures that some of the employees had recommended that over the life of the lights used 40% less electricity. And they actually put out a very white, clear light.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the added benefit of not only seeing a real energy reduction, but we had the secondary benefit of, we have a completely different quality of light, which helps the mood, helps the quality control from your equipment standpoint.
Because it's not like there's windows in there.
No.
So you really do need to have quality lighting. So
absolutely, and quality air too.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the other things we look at when we're going through doing evaluations of facilities that we are going to lease. As we take a look at what are the operating costs of the facilities, and a small business owner should do the same thing when they're negotiating a lease with a landlord. And you're looking at the space to see if it's adequate and meets your needs. You also want to know what you're going to pay in utilities if you lease it, especially if you're locking in for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we go through and do that, and we're fortunate that we have indoor air quality meters and things like that at our disposal. We can also go and check the fresh air content of the space. And a side story, we found a great facility up in Virginia to lease that looked fantastic, and the utility rates were real low. It was a very cold winter, and it's like, wow, this place must be really efficient. And we started poking around and noticed that the carbon dioxide levels in the air were extremely high in the afternoon in the building, and from all of the, where we weren't sure why, and we started checking and found out that the landlord had boarded up the fresh air intakes on the heating and air conditioning system in order to save the utility bills, which, you think you're doing a good thing, but then at the same time, carbon dioxide levels go way up in the workspace, people are getting sleepy, falling asleep at their desk, trading colds. So what's the balance of it? So
it's interesting, those metrics. It'd be fun to just put them in a computer and have them come out and spit out.
Well, it's interesting he would board up those intakes. That seems
to them it was just a no-brainer. That's how you save money.
He's old school.
Yeah, that's your okay. Sustainability is cut your costs.
All right.
My side of it is always, also look at when you're doing your business case, sometimes there's a safety element that comes along with it too.
Sure.
So,
I mean, you could kill everyone.
You want to have,
where are you going to be then?
But you'd have low, utility bill.
Absolutely.
My goodness. So what other types of sustainability projects are in the works for Lockheed Martin Aeronautics?
Well, again, as I mentioned, our Advanced Development Programs group is doing a lot of research, most of which I can't share because we're being broadcast live here, but we're so as not to tip off the competition. But we have been involved heavily with both NASA and the Department of Defense to try to help them develop new technologies for designing aircraft and upgrades to the aircraft that can help save fuel. If you look at like right now, we're working on our C-130 aircraft made in Marietta. We've discovered these little devices called microvanes, which are like little pieces of like a plasticized rubber, like a little strip that you attach towards the rear of the aircraft. And it breaks up the airflow coming off the back of the aircraft, where there's this vortex that creates some drag on the aircraft. And by disturbing that and breaking it apart a little bit, we can actually reduce the drag by 3.7%, and which reduces the fuel consumption by 2 to 3%. So, you're going to end up saving about 20 gallons of fuel for every hour of flight, and that's pretty decent. And with DOD currently operating about 355 C-130 aircraft, each with about 600 flight hours per year, they're going to end up saving about, $10 million in fuel costs just by, implementing a microvane project. But we're excited about the initial findings that we have with it. We currently are setting up some flight testing, because the other thing we want to do is make sure that we keep the young men and women that are operating these aircraft 100% safe, 110% safe. And with people occasionally jumping out of the back of the aircraft, paratroopers and such, we just don't want anything getting tangled up in something that we're doing that's going to, for a sustainability project that right. actually then has that safety element as a negative consequence. So we want to make sure we get it perfect, and we think we really do. With the design
do, like,
and the testing.
Six Sigma or
oh, yes.
ISO, like, I think it's 14,000 for the environmental.
Yep. We do. We've also, we just started a green belt program as well. In addition to having black belts and yellow belts, we have a green belt now program that we're putting in place to focus on the sustainability element for process improvement. And we're going through getting people certified for that.
That's
but
great.
When you're looking at sustainability at that level, so every percent, it's super important, right?
Absolutely.
I mean,
so those kind of little incremental sustainability of a percentage is, that's a huge thing when it, you know, rolls out all over in every instance.
Yep, it is. You may also see when, if you travel a lot or as you do, when you're, you know, sitting idle or, you know, watching schedules at the airport and looking for something to do, staring out the windows, and you notice on the wingtips of the aircraft, you see little winglets sticking right. up on a lot of the aircraft now. And that does the same thing. It's designed to reduce drag. And we're going through, we've been intentionally building some of our aircraft to accept those. Obviously, our aircraft are built to a very specific Department of Defense standard. And we're working with the DOD currently to be able to start installing those on aircraft that are coming off the line, because they also result in a fuel savings. And we're looking at the business case for adding them to existing aircraft. And on those, you know, the cost of retrofitting and certifying an aircraft, again, you have to look at your payback. And for some of the older aircraft, they may not have a potential payback on them, so those might not be good candidates. But we're going to start focusing on the ones coming down the lines to get those certified first, and then retrofitting of the most current ones that are out in the field, so that as those aircraft go
right.
through their life, you can actually see the
how much
the
is a gallon of aircraft fuel?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
$4 for regular. Is it like 20? I have like no idea. Yeah, you don't know?
No, well, I did have didn't a conversation with somebody that's had a friend who owned three oil fields, and
right.
he was paying $11 a barrel, and he was bringing in like 111.
Right, now it's like
so
$100.
So now he's very happy.
Right.
That he's a very happy man.
But
the rest of us, not
so much. It costs
more
than regular, right? I would think it costs more.
Mm.
No idea.
You know, I have never priced it. I'm
see,
I'm
now you're
gonna,
that's
going to
bother
go back.
You. You're going to be like,
will.
How much
I'm gonna
is that?
I'm going to check while you guys
you'll
talking.
Google it.
Yeah.
an interesting element that goes with that because we just recently flew an F-22 using an alternative fuel source. Just to prove that it could be done, and it worked fantastically. The challenge that you get within the whole sustainability picture, because you have to look at the entire process, not just the what's close up. And when we started talking with the military about it, and started learning that almost everything on their flight lines, everything that they use to support the aircraft, actually runs on the same aviation fuel that the aircraft itself uses. And from a supply chain standpoint, that way they only need to stock one type of fuel.
Right.
Every tank that they have for fuel is the same fuel. There's no risk of cross-contamination or getting the wrong fuel in the wrong vehicle, or you're trying to support an aircraft or something that's at a forward location, and it's like, ooch, you know, which type of fuel do I need to support this? Because I'm dealing with multiple types of fuel. Right now they have one type, and that makes it
super simple.
Excellent, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the challenges that we're facing, looking at alternative fuels, is it's not just will the aircraft perform with the fuel, but will everything perform with that fuel, and what will that fuel do when it's introduced to that supply chain to support it? Because you may have a smaller investment in one aspect, but increase your risk or increase your costs significantly in something that is showing up on someone else's books. And that's not cool, because you have to really look at the whole big picture of it.
Mm. It's $5 to $7 a gallon.
Oh, nice.
That's not so bad.
See that? But how many gallons does that plane hold? Like hundreds?
A lot.
Enough.
Why don't you Google that too?
No, I'm done Googling.
So what do you think it's smart to incorporate sustainability practices into your business?
When do I think or what?
No, why do you think it's smart for businesses to incorporate sustainability into their business practices?
Well, your customers expect it. It's the right thing to do. I know doing just the right thing to do doesn't pay the bills. But honestly, our experience has been from a facilitization standpoint, there is a lot of operating costs that comes into keeping a facility as large as ours, keeping the lights on and keeping the production going. And on our sustainability efforts, our Go Green efforts, everything that we can do to make a savings helps cut those bills down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the more we work at constantly chewing those bills down, the more funds that are available for other types of investments or to try new initiatives, do more research, expand operations, introduce new products. So that's the big payback for us and why from a small business to a large business, everyone has to pay an electric bill. Everybody has to have some water, and you're going to pay for that water. How much are you using? Take a look at it. Find some smart people. Get them involved. If you don't have some talent in-house, go out and look at some of the EPA websites. Look at some of the Georgia websites.
Get involved with Green Chamber of Atlanta.
Perfect.
They were on recently.
Yeah.
A good resource.
And as you know, a lot of the local universities have, sustainability programs. And students that are taking training in this field because it's starting to grow so much, and they need research projects in order to work through some of the different programs that they're doing. So they may even have some free or low-cost help available to an independent or small business person trying to figure out, how do I make my store or my business more efficient? I don't know. Somebody come help me.
Well, that's a good point. I think many people are unaware that the universities in the Atlanta area really are interested in helping businesses solve their problems. I know for my business, I actually had Kennesaw State help me write my business plan, and that's how I got involved in the program in the first place. So it was kind of the MBAs were helping me with the business plan. So environmental would be another great example for that. Smaller companies that don't have the resources of Lockheed Martin to reach out and get some best practices.
So you just call the university? Is that what you do?
Well, I usually just show up.
You just show up.
Start throwing elbows, but that's me.
Jump in an empty room.
No, I actually, there was 8 different companies vying for that position. So I had to give a presentation. In order to get
before you had their help
to the MBAs before I got their help. It was funny because one of them was a company that made like toilet bowl seats, and I'm like, oh, we'll just mark them off right now because nobody cares about that.
Nice.
Yes,
they're very important.
They are important.
Yes, they are,
especially when they're left up.
Exactly.
You live in a house full of men. These things happen. I think that I would like to kind of segue into getting to know you a little bit better and ask you from your perspective what your best advice would be to our listeners, just general life advice or business advice, whatever you feel like sharing today.
Sure. General life advice is try to take my job away from me because it is the best job on the planet. I love it. I think that the best advice is, I was raised by parents that were born and raised during the Depression. So from a very young age, I started to understand the importance of being frugal. And, we live in a society that's become rather disposable, and there are impacts with that. You think of all of the different little plastic water bottles that we're generating and all the different impacts that we can have, and it's pretty huge, and these things are going to be having to be dealt with generations from now by folks that follow us. So we need to try to keep those footprints small. We also need to get involved with helping the community because there aren't enough taxes in the world to provide every single social service or environmentally focused program. So you have to give back and, you know, give a Saturday a month if you can, if you're in a position in your life where you can get out there and adopt a highway and help pick up trash, you know, and do it in an area that needs it. You know, don't necessarily do it in an area that's high visibility or, you know, it looks beautiful, you know, and
I'd be bending over. Look, everybody, I'm picking up garbage.
But for me, do it safely, you know, get involved with an organized program, you know, wear the right gloves so you don't, you know, get cut hands, and wear your traffic safety vests and walk towards traffic, you know, remember that safety element to it. You know, it's, this is a tremendous field. I'm excited to see it growing. I'm really excited to see your listener base growing and their interests increasing in sustainability and everyone's understanding that there is true value in this and it is the right thing to do. And also, frankly, it can help you save some money if you're looking at your operating costs. So, get smart people involved. I've been fortunate to be surrounded by very talented people that can figure things out when I can't. And I've found as a leader, my job is to get the right people together, you know, get them motivated, set some boundaries, and turn them loose. And we've been able to make all our goals that way.
Mm-hmm. So. That's wonderful. And I agree with you that doing some outreach in your community is so important.
Yeah.
I spoke for a homeless women's shelter not too long ago, and it was just so eye-opening to go down there. And, of course, there was children there, and I brought some extra things from the house that we had, and they were just so grateful. I mean, the kids were just amazing. One of the kids was just like carrying the box around that I had kind of split everything up for the kids so to maximize the output in. It was just so eye-opening. You get so much when you give of your time, and it just makes you appreciate so much more the wonderful lives that we get to live, doing the things that we get to do.
Do you get like a jogging response physiologically? I've noticed that after a volunteering event where we get a bunch of employees together or folks and we go out and do something good for someone else or clean something up, you come back and it's... You almost want to high five each other, you know, almost get a real
endorphin
happy, good
kick.
Feeling. Yeah, absolutely. That's, and I think as, you know, considering the short amount of time we have on this planet to begin with, you know, to be able to have fun, in our communities and make an impact like that is so important. And, you know, if we can just set aside some time to do it, and not work ourselves to death in the process is a really nice thing.
I agree.
Yeah. Good message.
Good message.
Well, thanks.
So now I'm going to ask you your X factor. What is it that you bring to the table, David, that nobody else can bring?
Well,
other than, you know, not letting anyone have your job.
You've been very clear on that.
Right. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Very well good. No, I do. I absolutely love it here and really like the South. Again, I'm very appreciative to have the chance to move down here and work with folks because they are exceedingly nice and helpful. But my X factor, I guess, is... The education that I received from my parents in trying to not be a leech and just, you know, be a disposable person and act in a disposable way and consider that everything is disposable and you just can just, you know, get another one, build another one, buy another one, has helped a lot and helps keep me focused. I think I have a passion for this. I've had opportunities in life to pair myself or encounter different people that have mentored me and helped me figure out not only life, but also figure out how to have a good work ethic and to make an influence, regardless of the type of job that you have or the type of project that you're working on, that, you know, don't just deliver what you're trying to deliver, take it to the next step. And then once you're done, you know, go back and look at where you can course correct next time and then take that and share it. Don't be embarrassed by your failures. Don't be embarrassed by your mistakes. If, you know, find a young person that hasn't experienced this yet, that's just starting out and share it with them so they don't have to stumble into it the way you did and make the same mistakes ultimately.
That's great advice.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for being on today. I have to say,
well, thank you.
Everybody I've met at Lockheed Martin, you and then Stephanie Sten, she's wonderful. It's just been, and Ron Gagner, who I also know at
absolutely.
Lockheed Martin. Give him a shout out. Hey, Ron. So I just have to thank you all, Lockheed Martin, and you each individually for being such assets to the community.
I appreciate it. It's our pleasure to be able to, you know, live and work in Cobb County and drink the water. And, you know, we're going to do our best to take care of the place where we live and work.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And that wraps up our latest edition of Inside the Winner Circle. Thanks. And I will check back with y'all next week. Bye.